Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Rosie Baker, the editor of Ad News, and welcome to a special South by Southwest edition of podcast. Ad News journalist Sarah Homewood is on the ground in Austin, Texas, with Leo Bennett CEO Pete Bozulkowski and Twitter Australia MD Karen Stocks.
So we are sitting in Austin downtown, and we're nearing the end of South by Southwest Interactive. So thanks so much for coming and being part of our podcast. Well, early morning cast, Austin time. Really
pleasure.
Appreciate it. So it could be good to kick off with. So how many times have you both been to South by Southwest?
Well, for me, this is my first trip to South by. After last year, I got so much good feedback from everyone that I heard in market around how fantastic it was, and it's something that we should go and check out. So, yeah, I've done that this year and have absolutely loved it, been completely blown away beyond expectations of what I had.
I came last year, and I was kind of, once you bite into the cherry here, I've got absolutely hooked. It's just exceeded all expectations again. I didn't think it could actually get any better, but it has.
This is my first time actually, and I didn't really know what to expect because I haven't been to South by before. I've never been to Cannes, but I think it's just been so mind-blowing. I've really enjoyed
it. You're quite
everything.
Apprehensive. Why?
Because I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know if I'd be running around all day,
right,
or if I'd had enough time to do everything.
Right.
I was sort of a bit unsure what I'd find, but I've also found the 700 Aussies that are here, so I haven't been far from an Australian
yeah.
accent.
Yeah.
That's interesting. There's far more this year than I found last year. When we sort of came up last year, it was hard to spot the Australian.
Yeah.
And now here, it's been quite overwhelming with how many Australians are here.
It's really interesting because when I was talking to people going, well, what conferences are you going to go to? Are you going to do CES? Are you doing Mobile World Congress, Cannes, or South By? The feeling that I'm getting is a lot of people, unless you're absolutely hardcore consumer tech,
right,
just not doing CES as much, and the same with Mobile World Congress, and this is like the new event for people to go to. But
right,
yeah, there's Aussies on every corner.
Totally.
Like, everywhere.
I was saying that the flight between LAX and Austin felt a bit like the school bus. Like, everyone was going to camp. Like, it was all Australians. We're kind
fantastic.
Of all crammed in.
Fantastic.
And everyone was just super excited to
like, I was getting my luggage, and I heard an Aussie accent. It's like, hey, were you here as well?
We're all going.
Yeah.
And so why do you both come? Why has it kind of become sort of a must-go-to for you both?
I think it's a great question. You know, I think in our industry in particular, you know, sort of the creative advertising world, you come here not only to get inspired, but there is so much development in these new spaces. And if you think about what I've been blown away this weekend, it's just thinking about automation around AI and machine learning and how that's changing the way great organizations are creating content. You know, when it's upon a time you'd think content was come up with a great idea and then you publish it and it's fine, but it's getting far more sophisticated with actually understanding data, and then actually the computer's doing a lot of the grunt work these days. So I think it's not the be-all, end-all in terms of understanding trends, but to be exposed with such diverse thinkers, from listening to the CEO of Under Armour to, you know, guy who created iRobot Roomba, who was an Australian, and who would have thought? But it's just this world, it's moving such at a pace that being here is kind of your shortcut of understanding where the sort of latest trends are, and then how do you apply them back into what you do. So that's kind of the reason for me.
Yeah, and what I've liked about this conference is I've seen all of those things that you've mentioned, but on the social side, I've seen a lot of key concepts coming out. I know authenticity is a buzzword and it's used a lot, but I feel like that's been really pushed. Things like vulnerability and around being vulnerable and much more participation. So even though we're moving into a highly technological age, all the messaging has been around that gives you the opportunity for your consumers to participate more and not shut them out. So I really like that balance of messaging. So it's not just about the tech, but it's also about engagement, interaction, and all of those things as well.
Definitely. So were you in the keynote last night at 5 o'clock talking about all the AI?
Yes.
Yes. And were you daunted by that at all? The fact that robots are going to hopefully not take our jobs, but that they're going to, you know, be so intelligent that, you know, there'll be less need for humans to interact.
Yeah, look, I think it was a fascinating keynote because it was a guy who's obviously been involved in that sort of area of the category for so long. But what I loved was this sort of clarity around where the future of technology may be going, especially in the area of AI and robotics. And I think what was quite interesting was robots aren't going to replace humans, you know, and nor should they, nor should AI. AI is a different form. And if we are thinking about AI and robots in a way of replacing humans, then what's the point of that? Robots or AI technology is about making smarter decisions, not replacing the human conscience or finding that emotion. And I felt that was quite an interesting distinction. VR has been a huge facet in this conference. Now, he put up pictures where he was trialing VR in 1989 and he made a prediction that it would take over in 5 years. Now, it's 2015 and literally it's been the highlight of, or one of the highlights of the conference. And it's just interesting how some technologies you may think were going to take off and then it just takes time.
So it reminds me of the year of the mobile. It was always going to be the year of the mobile for like 5 or 6 years. And then last year, it was finally the year of the mobile.
Yeah.
It took off. Did you see the talk with J.J. Abrams?
Yes.
And the shortcut and the clips around Westworld.
Oh.
And some of the commentary around it doesn't actually really matter in the end whether you're a robot or a human, and exploring some of that as well, which is interesting around how that's going to play out.
It's actually mind-blowing because you see, I mean, NASA here have got a stand and they're showing how you can use a 3D printer in space to replace parts. And then when you saw that clip, you're actually seeing these robots that are human-like getting created by 3D printers. You look at Hollywood and you think, hang on, is that Hollywood? Or are we edging closer to that being a reality? And that's just mind-blowing.
Yeah,
it literally is.
And I think that comes back to the conference. You know, you've got film producers as well sitting there actually entering the tech space and talking about it and really challenging us to think differently around how those stories are portrayed with, you know, with robots and AI as well. So, you know, it's a great convergence of all of these ideas.
Mm. And talking about digital storytelling as well, kind of the fact that, you know, those people are on stage that are having conversations that are just as relevant to our industry as it is to the theatre space is what I find so interesting about how you tell captivating stories, which I guess is sort of where advertising is moving so much. It's less about, you know, putting an ad in front of someone. It's getting that brand buy-in and getting someone to feel like, you know, that they're part of that and they want to hear stories or get content from them, which I think is so interesting. We touched on a couple there, but are there any sessions that were real standouts?
I would say from an industry, not my industry, but industry in general, I thought the Hyperloop presentation was interesting. And for a couple of reasons. One, it's not a new technology. It's a technology that has been around, or the plans of how Hyperloop would work have been around for a very, very long time. Two, when you look at the problem it solves and the relative ease, you just know that they're going to come across so much red tape and it's going to be much more difficult than it has any right to be. And then thirdly, I thought the business model was interesting. I talked about participation earlier, but around the fact that they're crowdsourcing all their intellectual talent into the process is a really interesting way to look at different business models as well. From a personal one, I thought Brain Brown was just outstanding. Did you see Brain Brown around?
I can't remember what the actual session
clearly
was.
Yeah.
But it was sort of about emotion and recognizing how you may be sort of framing things in your own mind, where if you can kind of deconstruct how you're feeling about something, you might come out with a better...
That sounds fascinating. No, I missed that.
The book's Daring Greatly. It's actually Daring Greatly.
I missed that, yes.
Yeah, and it's basically saying you cannot innovate without the courage to get smacked and fail. And I think culturally, when you take that back to organisations, even though we all talk about it's great to fail, so many organisations still struggle. So many individuals still struggle with going, I just failed. Woohoo, I'm not great. In reality,
I'm pivoting.
It's like, I got there, I failed. Like, and that's so part of the innovation process that you cannot innovate without failure. You need to be confident and comfortable about it as well. And that's a hard personal journey for people to go on.
Totally. That sounds like a great session. I can't believe I missed that one.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
What were the standouts for you, Pete?
It's a topic that's always been discussed for the last few years, and it was one that was raised last year, data. Well, I think one of my standouts was meeting the founder of a boutique store called Story in New York. And she completely revolutionized the business model of a retail outlet where the concept is storytelling, but also using data. And so she said, well, I don't sell products, I sell experiences. And so the way the store works is that every week the store changes. Based on the story. Now, the genius thing about her business model is that she brings sponsors on board, whether it's Procter & Gamble, whether it's whoever, and they pay to be in her store.
Wow.
So she sells products, but people pay. And it's so unique. And what she's done is she's also encouraged locals in America to come in and pitch new ideas that could be curated in the stores. But Whoopi Goldberg walked into her store and said, I love this. Can I be on that panel where I'm seeing these young, you know, designers or whatever? So this concept of she took that to another level, and she got Google and Yahoo and IBM on board. And so it's not just a pretty design looking store. It's actually using the latest in technology. And so the way the products are actually promoted is using, I would say, stalls where it's digitally enabled. So when someone picks up, a Gillette razor, there's data behind it, and then why did you pick it up? And so the whole store talks to a network. And so she's got all this data that she pitches back to her clients, really, about what's performing, what isn't. Why is it placed there? Is it working in its place there? Your messaging. So what she does is then uses influencers to go in there and then create content. So it's not just a great curated store that changes every week. There's data behind it, and then there's this content that she pushes out. And literally for 2 years out, she has sponsors booked up every week, right?
Wow, that's amazing.
So you know, if things don't fly, it's okay.
Yeah.
And but the question that was asked is, are you going to expand? She's only got one store, and I think it's in Greenwich. Or her answer was, no. I have 24 people. I'm happy. I am making a lot of money, but that's not the reason why I'm doing it. I love the fact that I can control it, and I love the fact that it's unique and no one can replicate it. I just felt like that was such an amazing thing. Personally, one I've been most inspired about was meeting the CEO of Under Armour.
Oh, wasn't that brilliant?
And this guy, what I loved about him, he was so vulnerable in this stage where he kind of just went, here it is. You know, this is not an overnight sensation. I started 20 years ago and, you know, built this brand up from nothing. And literally he was an NFL player or college footballer who said, I didn't want to use cotton shirts because they just get drenched in sweat and will slow you down. So he created this thing, which was the Under Armour. Brilliant concept. But one of the things he said was, you know, his success is data being the new oil for his company. And I thought, you're a sporting apparel organization, but he's talking data. And I think no matter who you are, whether you're an offline, online, physical or not physical, data was this thing that was the power of connecting to a consumer and actually understanding what consumers want. That was riveting to me.
Yeah, it's like from a business perspective, you can no longer sell a product or get away with selling a product. You actually have to figure out what it is you're providing,
absolutely,
what service you're fulfilling.
Absolutely.
And some of the things that he came up with and the gaps he's filling in the market, we know more about our car than our body.
Yeah.
It's quite shocking. It's like you could know when your car got last service, but your body... Yeah. You don't monitor
that insight absolutely floored me.
I'm just sitting there going, oh my God, I'm going straight out to buy one of those things, and then the doctor more often, and it was really, really impressive.
Yeah.
And again, we forget things take 20 years.
Yeah.
We get caught up in this cycle of now, and everything's now, and you're an overnight success. You're an overnight success in 20 years.
And he failed a lot. And he was happy to sort of declare that. And one of the things you don't see with these global corporations or even, you know, startups, whatever, his emotion on stage, he came out and said, I love what I do. I love my company. I love my company.
Yeah.
And I just felt like so glad to see someone so transparent about what they do, about, you know, their success. And it's rare to see these days because people are so composed. Everything is about, you know, perception and what they put out there. But just to see someone raw.
The vulnerability.
I thought
that came out
a lot. Totally.
In a lot of talks, there was this vulnerability where the speakers were just not, hey, this is the story I want to tell you. This is the story of me, and I'm sharing that.
Totally.
Yeah, there's a lot of that I feel like at South By. Everyone feels... really open on stage. It doesn't feel like a lot of conferences you go to, it's all pre-rehearsed, it's all pre-prepared. They're just kind of there to get through the slides and kind of get their point across. But it feels like there is, I guess, a conversation that's going on. People want questions, they want to engage with the audience as well, which I think makes this conference feel very different as well. Yeah. Everyone's there for the same reason, to learn and have these kind of conversations and really impart some knowledge that people can take away with them, which I think is really great. And I guess for me, I was talking to Karen a bit about this before, but from an industry perspective, I saw this fantastic session, a panel about racism in advertising, which was really powerful. And I think, and obviously the US is a very different market to what Australia is, but they were kind of talking about how segmentation in advertising could be actually causing some, you know, greater racial problems if you're sitting in an agency and saying, you know, we need to sell to Hispanic mothers of this age group, that, you know, you're kind of breaking people down into silos that they maybe don't need to be in. And they were talking about how emotions, that I think it was something, the percentage they were saying is 98% of humans, we have the same emotions. It's happiness, it's sadness, it's anger.
Yeah.
It's all those things, and that has nothing to do with race, which I thought was really powerful. And also that they raised a really interesting point that we might not even need multicultural agencies. Like, why do we have different agencies that sort of say that we're multicultural and we can do multicultural marketing, when that's what every agency should be doing? And a young guy from a global network got up and he said that you know, I am part of a big network, I work for the multicultural agency, and we just want to pitch. Now the brand wants us to, you know, talk to the bigger creative agency who's doing all our creative, but how do I go back to my office and say, I think we should just do the same work, that we don't need to change the work that we've just pitched in for the multicultural part, we just should be doing the same part, which I thought was really, really powerful. And also, you know, raising the whole issues around that if everyone looks similar in the boardroom of an agency that is, you know, coming up with the idea, that's not good either, which I just thought it was very, very powerful. And another one I saw, again, it's not just kind of off the back of the data conversation you were having, I thought it was really interesting about how data science doesn't have a code of ethics. And sort of coming back to the whole data piece, you know, they're talking about Under Armour and how, you know, everything, and also story, everything now has a data component in it. But the fact is, because it's so new, I think, you know, that the guy who was talking was saying that I think the first reported role of a data scientist was in 96. So it's a very new profession, and, you know, you're dealing with such personal information, but there is no code of how to deal with these things like privacy. And also there's no real kind of code about what the community should be doing and how they should be interacting with each other, which I thought, and you're sort of saying, you know, it should be like doctors and journalists, that there should be this code for how you interact with data, which I thought was really, really interesting, considering how much it, you know, how much data there is on us.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. To me, it kind of gets into the same area as privacy as well, because, you know, we kind of kid ourselves that there's privacy out there. You know, two things that I look at is going, as a society, we've never really had privacy. We've kidded ourselves that we have. But if you think of, I think of my mum, who used to do the telephone lines. They used to sit there and listen to everyone's phone calls just to keep themselves interested and things like that. So, you know, there was, even though you thought you were having private phone calls, like, you weren't. I think also too is, I mean, I've got a teenage daughter, she's 17. Privacy is just not even a word in her vocabulary. Like, she just doesn't understand the need, the point, the reason. They're just completely open. Now, I'm not saying that's a good thing. It's the reality of where they're at the moment. It's like, this is me. This is who I am. I'm so used to living my life in public on the internet that if you put privacy in front of me, I don't even know how I would deal with that privacy. So
they're kind of an open platform, aren't they? Because you're sort of, you've grown up, you're on the social platform, you put yourself out there, it's documented, it ain't going to get erased, which is quite interesting. I saw a presentation, it was a startup, and they were pitching to McDonald's, and I think it was called Craver. And so what they were building an AI sort of platform on Slack. And what it was is that if you're on Slack and you're communicating with a fellow colleague, they have found a program, software that sits on Slack that would say, if you were, look, I'm a bit hungry, should we grab something to eat? This software would interrupt and say, hey, Susan, how about some Mexican? Because there's a Mexican around the corner. Would you like Mexican? And then you type it in and it learns. And so if you engage with it enough, it will start learning your habits. And then it will remember that you catch up with Steve on a Tuesday, and it will start sending you recommendations. And now, it was a small little room for where this was being held. No one flinched. And I kind of sat there thinking, is that intrusive?
But doesn't that happen today already?
It scares the crap out of me. Yeah. Just but, feel like I just don't want
but, as it starts to know you more, it starts learning about you. And I don't know whether you guys saw the robot in the IBM Watson.
No.
You have to check this out. Because this thing, the way it works is that I have tablets. And rock, paper, scissors is the game. And then what it does, so that they may have, you know, I don't know, 10,000 people that might walk through there playing it. And what that does is the computer is actually recording it and learning human habits and human interface. That's right. And so what you do is then you actually play the robot itself. And it's an actual robot. And it wins. Because and it's winning. And they showed you when South By started how it was losing. And it's starting to learn based on the data. And it's learning. I went home that night to the hotel room, and then I saw on a blog that Hilton Hotels have just launched the robot at reception. So when you turn up and then, you know, check in, there's the robot, and it will talk to you. And it's learning what humans want. So, you know, hi, how are you doing? Do you have a long day? You know, would you want a massage tonight? And it's this thing's talking to me. And we're engaging in a conversation. But it's learning through data. And I think this data thing is that, and I think it's the guy, when he said, it's not about replacing humans, it's that using data to get smarter, to make smarter decisions. And this, I was blown away. So if you walk into the IBM thing, if you beat the robot, I will give you money. Because this thing is, it's just incredible.
But did you see last week that the Google AI program beat the world master in some ancient Chinese game that had never been, they didn't think this would ever happen. I was saying that was like the line that cannot be crossed.
Totally.
And the AI program
beat it. So, but it's like what that guy was saying last night about sort of, you know, that AI isn't going to replace human jobs. But the other thing I thought was really interesting is he's saying that you're going to hire people in the future based on how they interact with AI.
That is
so fascinating. I think of diversification and inclusion, and to me that's exactly the same lines. It's like, how do you actually start working better with diverse groups, different sexes, different cultures, different races, to get the best out of them? And that skill set is becoming more and more important, especially because, you know, there's no geographic boundaries anymore. We all work in a global organization, and we're having conversations all over the world.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So to me, that's part of this. It's just the next step of that skill set around how to engage and include different people.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Well, that example that you raised about the game.
Yeah.
Elon Musk commented, and he said, "What happened there?" He said, is literally 10 years ahead of its time. That's IBM Watson. So that's the same thing. That's the same software that this robot is. I mean, that is so well ahead of its time that it's actually scary that these machines are learning.
Quicker than we ever thought that they would.
Totally. It's amazing. Mm. Absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. Do you think the Hilton robot is going to work out that everyone wants a late checkout?
And good coffee.
I was going to say good coffee.
Good coffee. Absolutely.
It would be great if you could walk over and just like hit a button and then coffee turns up. Yeah, it's got your order. That's my dream.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how are they going to program it for all those annoying things that people want? Can I have an upgrade? And the robot's like, no.
Totally.
The computer says no.
Yeah, exactly. I guess, you know, we've talked about so many different ideas and concepts. What do you think are some of the key takeaways you're going to be taking back to the office and telling people about, or really, you know, implementing in sort of how you do things day to day?
Yeah, I think for me, is technology is moving faster than anyone's expecting. The pace of change And to me, and not in one specific area, in so many different areas, and the opportunities at the moment are just endless. I think also too, what I'm seeing, that there's a social change that goes with that as well. When I talk about vulnerability, participation, authenticity, the buzzwords that have been around for a while, but I think I'm seeing that nice melding point of this new technology participating with these social skills. So to me, it's like, how do you bring those together and help clients understand without being scared? That to me is the big thing I'll be taking away.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think the coming here, the world's moving so fast, and you know, data, technology, not being afraid to try things. I think the one thing that I've learned here is that you have to try, and there are a lot of clients that are a bit hesitant to try because there are strong business reasons why not to. But what I see here is that there's a lot of trial, and the companies that are winning are the ones that are trialing new things, that are actually understanding what the consumer wants. And right here, when you think about VR being I think I saw a statement that said VR will be the new social platform. When you see that in lights, you think, how? I don't understand. But it's moving at such a pace that if you sit there and contemplate too much, it's going to pass you, and you're going to be irrelevant. For an Under Armour to be a tech company, not just selling shoe and apparel, a health company. Actually, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of, what category are you in? And it's kind of defining the category. So I think as an agency, we sort of moved to that space 2 years ago, where we're not just an advertising agency. We have to think holistically, agnostically about how we solve business problems. This only highlights the need that it needs to be accelerated even further. You have to go faster. Understanding the core principles, storytelling will always be there, but how that story is being told is so different and diverse.
And how people want to hear that
That's
story.
Right.
And it's more around how I participate in the story.
That's right. That's
the
right.
Story. That's the big thing that I'm
saying. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and it's really about, you know, thinking. And we all say it. I think it's like being consumer first, and every brand says they're doing it and they want to do it. But I think I was in a session about messaging apps, and sort of that's where a lot of, you know, millennials and the 18 to 24s are really in, and it's actually using the products and being there so you actually know as a consumer what the consumer wants, as opposed to just kind of scattergunning across all platforms and hoping it sticks. It's kind of, and again, that authenticity piece is like, if you're going to be there 100% and use it yourself and be really authentic with what platforms you're using and how you're using them, because you use them yourself, which I think is really interesting. And on the change point, I think going back to the office, I think, and you know, we're a publisher, so we're slightly different, and we're going through a lot of change and trying to be relevant in our space and kind of serve the industry the best we can. So I think that's sort of an idea I'll take back professionally and personally, I guess, is to not be afraid of that change and really, you know, embrace it and not sort of stand here and say, you know, we've always done things the way we have, so we're going to keep doing that. And it's, you know, the VR example, it's like, even if we can't see how it might benefit us in the future, it's kind of looking at all these new technologies and looking what they can do for our business, I think is really important. And I kind of hope we take that back and sort of see all these learnings and what people are doing with data and all these different things, and seeing how we can make our service better and our product better, which I think, you know, is so fantastic about
South. We have to get a new relationship with risk. We just need a new relationship. I think whenever the pressure's on, we just all go back into that safe zone. Like, this is what's worked, because our whole risk relationship is wrong, and we need to change that relationship to give us permission to go, yeah, we've got no idea, and that's okay, because we're figuring this out. And when we partner with businesses and brands, we're figuring this out with you. We don't know the answer. We're going on this journey together, and that's a very different relationship.
And it comes back to that psychology piece again, doesn't it? It just kind of comes full circle. It's so interesting that, you know, humans, we don't like being uncomfortable. When you start taking that, when you start taking those risks, you know, the heart rate goes up, we start to get a bit jittery, and then we kind of go back to our safe zone.
And we're doing the breathing.
Yeah.
I prefer to call it tactical breathing, though.
I like it. Yeah, we were taught how to breathe in this session.
Right.
Which was very, I felt calm afterwards. I was breathing in a square. It was in for four, hold for four, out for four. Yep.
And then hold for four.
And then hold for four again. I missed the last
one. I'm out of breath. I go,
I don't know how you could do that in sort of client meetings or pitches. You kind of just can't stand there and be like, I'm just going to breathe for a second. It's very hard. But
you're having that frustrating me. Excuse me.
Just hold your ears. Rub your earlobe. Since Seinfeld say, USA, wasn't that the... Absolutely.
And I guess what is... There are so many brands here, obviously, and there are so many houses and brands doing really interesting things. If you had to kind of pick one, what's sort of the best brand activity either of you have seen?
Look, I liked a lot of, it's not really, it is a brand from the programs. I like the Mr. Robot display, the Game of Thrones display. I love the really simple ways that you bring your whole fan base in to participate. And even though people can't see this, this is like, I'm carrying it around, this is my favorite.
Picture. Oh, that's awesome.
That I got. It is amazing.
That is great.
I love it. It's my new profile picture. It's like,
is it going on the desk?
Love it. Yeah, that's going to flame.
For those who can't see it, it says F-U-C-K the system. Mr. Robot's fantastic.
It's a very serious face too.
I know, I really have like that. This is the first
that is fantastic.
I nailed that picture.
Yeah,
it's like that cheeky. Yeah. Anyway.
That's brilliant.
One thing I will do a shout out is I didn't go to the McDonald's party. Yeah. A lot of people were raving about it because Conrad Sewell, an Australian, was playing. So I just wanted to shout out the Aussie to play. Everyone was just raving around how amazing he is.
Yeah. I didn't go to the party, but the loft was amazing. Yeah. And I thought what they were doing, the pitching with startups and kind of their room they have, but the loft and sort of what they were doing with virtual reality again, it's, you know, thinking of a massive brand in a totally new way.
Totally.
Like, you walk in, it feels a bit like a bar, so I was not sure what I would find, but, you know, they've got the traditional product, but they'd even kind of reinvented the sundae, you know, they had them all laid out, you could have whatever topping you wanted and walk around, and you could kind of go inside a giant Happy Meal with virtual reality, and you got to paint it yourself. And it was just so interesting to see this heritage brand really embrace what was coming down the track and really make it work for them. Because they could have said, you know, we're McDonald's, how do we use virtual reality? It doesn't fit with us, you know, we're a fast food restaurant chain. But, you know, they really embraced the fun and the play that does go along with their brand, and it worked really well.
I agree. I think for me the two standouts have been... one, which was, it's completely unexpected, it is McDonald's. And I think just to see that they're willing to take part, they were here last year, and I think they had a small presence, but this year they really amplified. And I think it's, if you can get, I would say, these are the early adopters, you know, the ones that are pushing the boundaries of progressiveness, and to get them on side for a brand that's been around for, you know, in 100 years or whatever, to be thinking, reimagining their own business. And what I love was when you walk into that loft that you were talking about, to see the innovations coming from Australia. And so they had Create Your Taste, which is an Australian innovation.
Yeah.
And I think to see it here, and
McCafe.
It's McCafe, absolutely. The drive-thru, all these things that are invented in Australia. But to see it here, in terms of, we had a few startups last year who would talk about, how do you reimagine the retail experience when in Australia they're already doing it?
Yeah.
So I think that was fascinating. But just VR and seeing Samsung, like, I don't know whether you got to try the roller coaster ride.
No, I
wasn't. And the game. And I tell you, it was like being on a roller coaster while I'm sitting on a seat and then playing this video game. I kind of lost all sense of where I was. And you're literally in the game. And I think they're just taking this to an entirely new level. And I'm just, you kind of think, well, where's this going to go? Like, what is it going to replace? And that's the scary thing. Are you going to sit at home and play soccer and not leave your lounge room? Like, where is this going? But that was mind-blowing because I think, you know, those brands that are pushing themselves. And I think when you think Samsung, you think, yeah, VR, absolutely. But then to see the McDonald's and see the Happy Meal come to life, like, wow, that's a different experience.
The other interesting thing around McDonald's is they had that little room in the convention centre and they had their C-suite rotating around that,
totally,
doing talks. So what that showed me too, it wasn't just the innovation team.
Yes.
You actually had your C-suite committed to this, spending 2 to 3 days here, every couple of hours, doing intimate conversations that were open to the public.
I completely agree. I was in an 8 o'clock session. And it was a startup pitching. And in the back of the room, not sitting down, was Steve Easterbrook, the worldwide CEO. And they didn't even announce him. He was just there, just observing. And you know what? I'm sure there's plenty of other fish that need to be sort of fried.
Yeah.
But he was here. And he was, you know, it was amazing. So I completely agree with you.
And I think that top-down point is, you know, a really good one, because I think sometimes, you know, all these brands will come here and, as you say, it's the innovation team, but what are they doing, you know, the other 11 months out of the year? And it's just such a massive commitment for McDonald's to say, you know, innovation is, you know, so much of a core at what we're doing now. It's what we're prioritising over pretty much everything else, which just kind of puts them in such an amazing set, I guess, moving into the next couple of years. I think they'll be a really, really interesting brand to keep watching.
I think the one thing I have to bring up, because I was fortunate to see him, was Obama. He was so articulate, so poised. And then when he was asked a question, so it was a $1 million question around the privacy issue with Apple, the way he sort of, he kind of said, I won't answer that question, I can't comment on that case, but he did. And he
which
did it.
I did, this is what I would say.
But he did, and it was just so, you know what, he didn't skirt around the issue. He kind of said, well, you know what, there's a reason why when the FBI turn up and they've got a search warrant and they can come into your house and they'll go through your computer and they'll go through all your belongings if there's cause to do it. Now, the smartphone is it. That's the new computer. Yeah. You don't need a laptop. Yeah. You've got this. His analogy of FBI turning up to your home with a search warrant, well, we can't now. So what happens with that? And then he made the point of, you know, if it was China or Russia asking for it, then how would, you know, the American population react to it? They probably wouldn't want that to happen. But because we're asking, there's this whole debate. So I don't know. It was a very interesting perspective, but I was just so impressed that he was so grounded, but he wasn't scared to take on those sort of tough questions. And it was highly impressive.
It is really interesting because with this technology, you do still ask, what is the role of the authority? What is the role of the government? You know, there's always this conversation,
that's right,
how far do we want them to participate in our personal lives or not? That has to be completely readdressed. I think the whole thing around, you know, public pushback or the corporate pushback around this iPhone, how much of that is based on previous lack of transparency from the government with what happened with Snowden and all of
absolutely.
That? And would that be any different if that had never happened? And is there a role for government to come in and be much, much more transparent that they have been? We're asking now from our corporations to be transparent. Should we expect that from our authorities? They're caught up in exactly the same cycle around if they want access to this and they want that permission, what is incumbent on them to actually deliver back when it comes to transparency and the role of the state?
It's so interesting because as technology changes so fast, and that's sort of what we're seeing here, and you know, the transformation that's going to take place over the next 5 years, this is going to be a moving target.
Yeah,
it's like what they might be struggling to access today, you know, they're going to have the same issues with a new piece of technology potentially 12 months down the track. You know, what if people are having clandestine meetings with their virtual reality headsets, you know, across the world? It's so interesting, but I think, you know, the transparency piece is obviously key. There feels a bit, you know, we are giving away so much data and so much information all the time, and there is this lack of understanding from the consumer, especially, you know, as we're talking about before, the millennial consumer who are less concerned about how much information they're giving away. It's going to be really interesting as they grow up and technology progresses, what kind of happens with this policy.
And they have less trust in the government than we do. they start from the basis of absolute distrust of the authority, because that's all they're ignoring. So they're starting in a really different position. It's like they're at polar ends.
But didn't you find it fascinating on how much presence the US government had here? How many seminars? We've obviously got, you know, a government now that's in place who is trying to sort of forge forward with innovation as a key agenda. But you come here and there's so many, and to have the president here, one, but two, I think I'd counted 20 seminars where the government is pushing this sort of innovation agenda and trying to recruit top talent.
Yeah.
And you think, well, if Americans are kind of, well, I don't like, you know, I don't trust the government, actually, wouldn't it be cool to work for the government? Because I think I saw a panel and they had former Google, they had former Facebook people working. They're on a recruitment drive. And you think, I don't see brands doing that. I don't see the Cokes of the world doing that, but I'm seeing the government doing that. It's amazing.
It's like they're saying, it's your responsibility as an American to participate in the government. Don't sit there and knock us. Actually, come join us. And they really come participate. This is what we're doing, and we need you to help us achieve this. It was like the open, come work for
that's
us,
right,
come participate in your
government. Making it cool.
Yeah.
Don't worry about Facebook or Twitter.
It's like, you can go and do health forms.
That's right. That's
form.
Right.
Yeah, because that was so amazing. Like, Obama was up on stage and he said, we need you.
Yeah.
Like, he called out.
But that was the messaging from all the government panels.
Totally.
It was the invitation to participate. Come and participate. It's, you know, it's part of your responsibility to participate in government, which is very... I couldn't imagine that happening in Australia.
No.
And then I'm sitting there going, oh, let me add it. Can you just...
They might find that photo, though, of you. What was it? F the system.
I'm sure they have.
It's in the cloud now.
That's the point.
We already floated that, you know, none of us did very well. We didn't go to any parties. What are we doing?
No.
I know. I heard, you know, we didn't go to any parties. So I got best parties. So, like, you know, where was your favourite place to grab a drink after all the sessions?
My first time to Austin, there is a great restaurant with a great vibe. I wouldn't even say on every corner, every 10 metres.
Yeah.
And what really struck me with Austin is the moment I landed, the openness of the city. So you can just go and talk to anybody. I could go sit at a table with other people on there and they would welcome you with open arms. That's what I find enjoyable when I go away.
I agree. I think southern food, I mean, I think you need to go to the gym for about a week. Straight for 24 hours, but just the food, it's just so wholesome. Everyone, you are right, it's a warm feeling that you get here. Coffee, not so great apart from this place.
Margaritas
are great, absolutely. The whiskey here, the American whiskey, is absolutely phenomenal. But people are so open and welcoming. And we had a situation the other day, a colleague of ours just went to the bar. Quick drink before seminar, and he sort of met a couple from Austin, and they were he was actually selling a product, and he was here to get inspired by the conference, and he was actually selling a, you know, when you get a Windex and that little tube that goes at the end. Well, his frustration was that the tube didn't actually hit the bottom, so you got that little bit, so he would sell the bits at the end and that you attach, and it was called the last squirt. And my colleague is a creative, and he showed him the infomercial, said, I've made an infomercial, would you give me any tips? What do you say to this guy? The last squirt. But, you know, but this is the kind of people that you'll meet.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's amazing. I was sitting on a park bench outside the convention centre the other day before I was about to kind of go meet some more people, and, you know, someone asked, like, sit down next to me. I was like, sure, and we started chatting, and she's from BBH. She ended up within like 5 minutes of our conversation, you know, without even knowing really anything that I did or who I was. She was adding me on WhatsApp because I was saying I was here by myself. She's like, we're going to parties, come out. And that's just the vibe I've had from absolutely everyone.
You just pick up people.
It's great.
I've never experienced anything like this, you know, just how
and
open everyone is.
The music's so good, isn't it?
Music, amazing.
Have you gone to a boot scoot?
No.
You've got to try that.
I would if I'd had time. That's the only downside.
Yeah. Yes.
Is I could spend a year here and I don't think I would cover everything that needed to be covered.
Totally.
Yeah. There's so much. And I think what the big tip for me is actually give up on trying to conquer everything.
Yes.
Just try and make sure you have a good experience.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Definitely. I think a year of this kind of speed could kill me, though. Like, I don't think I
It's only 5 days. So we go as long as it.
Thank God. And look, lastly, I'd just like to quickly touch on, you know, if you're both going to Cannes as well this year, and, you know, is there room for both, I guess, in the agency calendar, South by and Cannes?
Yeah, for me, I think they're totally different. I went to Cannes for the first time last year. For me, Cannes is much more media creative-centric. South by Southwest is just anyone and everything with so many different divergent ideas. So I think they're very, very different. Very different feel, very different focus. I think, you know, you go to Cannes, there's one track. Like, you go, that's what you do. You go to the events and you balance that with meetings. And also, too, you're in the south of France during the day for the sun's beating. Here, you're hardcore during the day. There's 50 simultaneous sessions you can go to that you have to choose. And then you're just, like, having fun at night. So to me, they're very different stakeholders, very different agendas.
Yeah.
And I think they coexist really well.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't think there's so many great conferences, festivals that celebrate different things. And, you know, from a CES, which is very specific on that technology, to come here, there's technology, but, you know, it's not all about technology.
No.
And, you know, you see the president talking or whatever. And then Cannes is very much based on creativity and obviously media innovation. I think it'd be sad to say it's one or the other. And there's so many other conferences that go on in the world, you know, that you know, you have to learn. And I think in this day and age that, you know, you've got to be inspired of what are individual entities, companies doing out there to push the envelope on how to connect with a consumer better, how to make brands more relevant, how to make agencies more relevant. And I think it's more about absorbing that and getting inspired. And if you've got the luxury, if you can do it, fantastic. It's a, you know, lives are busy and all that kind of stuff, but if you can do it, great. Why not?
Yeah, so South by's not killing Cannes just yet.
I just think they're two different,
they're two different
animals. You know, it's like saying CES is a replacement of South by. They're two different things, and I don't think they are. And they will always coexist, and I'm sure there'll be others that pop up.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to be traveling around the world for a little while just yet, then. That's good.
Just bring your own coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Mind you, I think Australian coffee is conquering the world.
Totally.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's our greatest export at the moment.
It sure is.
Agree.
You've been listening to Ad News Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.